Hour number two kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Let's hit some hour two headlines. What did we miss yesterday, Sam?
Thanks, John.
You're welcome.
News in the media industry as Bill Belichick signed a deal with Omaha Productions as an analyst. His first assignment will be coming at the draft with the Pat McAfee show. And I think this one will be really, really interesting to see. To me, I think I think Bill Belichick is going to have a really sneaky kind of good TV career here. And I think that, you know, he's got a lot of those stories that are inside of him that he's just, you need somebody to kind of draw him out of him. And I think that, you know, McAfee will be a great job at doing that. He came on yesterday and was talking about this punt return that Pac-Man Jones had back in the day and how he was just stressing to his team, do not go and, you know, and hit a punt to Pac-Man Jones, like he's going to kill us. And then it was the video of Pac-Man returning it. I think you'll just see a lot of those stories kind of get drawn out, and it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, for context, Pac-Man's like, he was part of the in-studio staff that was with McAfee yesterday. I saw the same thing, and it was great, actually, you know, stating the obvious, Bill knows ball, and he seemed so comfortable yesterday. You were seeing him smiling, laughing, awesome flex behind him with all the Super Bowl trophies in his den where his Zoom camera was. I mean, I was kind of excited after seeing that yesterday. It's like you could learn some stuff listening to him. It'd be good.
He needs a win.
Yeah, he does.
He needs a win, and he needs to be good at this. So I hope that motivates him to kind of show some of the riz that he has. That's short for charisma, Bob.
Yes, I know.
Because, like, Belichick's been on the wrong side of the news the last basically month or so. I don't know if you guys watched that Patriots Dynasty documentary, but basically it was like Robert Kraft, good. Bill Belichick, man, what a jerk. Everything that's gone wrong in the organization is Bill Belichick's fault, and those Super Bowls, those were all Tom Brady and Belichick. You know, he was the Spygate guy. He was the one doing all the cheating. And then yesterday the report came out from ESPN. I don't know if you guys read that, where they're talking about Belichick trying to get the Falcons job and basically how Robert Kraft gave a quote-unquote stark assessment of Belichick's character. Basically, like, don't trust him. He's a snake in the grass, and basically said that he scared the Falcons and Arthur Blank away from hiring Bill Belichick, because if you recall, that seemed like a foregone conclusion that they wanted him. He wanted to be there. Then all of a sudden they had moved on to Raheem Morris.
Yeah. What was the quote? Said, you know, you hire him, it won't end well. That's how he put it to Blank. I mean, I was not a Robert Kraft fan. You're right, though. Belichick needs a win right now.
If you hire Bill, you will not have a happy ending. And trust me, if there's anyone who knows about those. I mean, so like Bill Belichick's just been on the wrong side. You know, really going back to the breakup of Brady. Brady won. Belichick hasn't won a playoff game. He got there once and got absolutely blown out in one of the worst performances in playoff history. And then, yeah, everything else is just, he's lost the power struggle, he's lost the respect, and he needs a win. He needs to prove that he is not a washed-up old man mind, that he still has got some things to offer.
People have really been dragging him through the mud,
man. I know, and I like Belichick.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's been on the wrong side of everything. Like, he didn't get a job, now we found out why, and that Patriots dynasty, I kind of felt bad for him during the documentary, just... If I'm him, like, he just looked sad even when he was getting interviewed. It's like he knew that he was signing up to, like, be made a fool of. And to not get the proper respect that he deserves, because it's like a Patriots documentary. Of course they're going to make the owner look good. Like, it's a Robert Kraft documentary. It's like, here, Robert Kraft's a genius, and he loves Tom Brady, and I'm just here. He looked sad even having to do that. It was a hit job.
Then you got, like, the quote that came out where it's like, we played for Tom, but we worked for Bill. You know,
I didn't even see that quote. Yeah, that's I mean, that's true.
Yeah.
I just never seen him smile so much. Like, yesterday, it just makes you wonder, too, if he's got somebody coaching him saying, hey, man, just the things we're saying, you got to go out there and kill it. You know, be happy, tell your stories. because that version of Bill Belichick's interesting. The press conference, post-game press conference, Bill is horrible.
Yeah.
I think he'll enjoy talking ball.
Yeah.
Do you think he'll ever, like, transition to full games or just be, like, a analyst segment guy?
I think an analyst segment guy and, like, a middle-of-the-week, like, film breakdown guy is kind of his destiny. I don't know if I'm Belichick. I don't know if I trust him to be able to work on the fly quickly enough.
Yeah, and make succinct points.
Right.
And, yeah.
A preparation guy. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a preparation guy. He probably wants to break down the film and actually see what's happening. And I think, like, him, like, ideally, I think, you know, maybe do something on Sunday mornings and then, like, a Wednesday game of the week, scheme of the week. I'm breaking down this film in depth for 15 minutes, like, yeah, kind of how Kobe used to do with his documentary or his whatever show that was
Detail.
Called. Yeah, Detail. There you go. Mm-hmm. I want to see that. I was wanting to call it Shadow, but, like, the logo was, like, a shadow. Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. But, like, that. That's what I want to see with Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he could keep up fast, you know, quickly enough during the actual broadcast.
Yeah.
Although, if you have him on one station and Tom Brady on the other station and them just competing against each other in the final battle, like, that would be intriguing to me.
That would be funny. Like John mentioned earlier in the end of the first hour, Caitlin Clark nearing an 8-figure endorsement deal with Nike. Obviously, that one was just a matter of time before that one was announced, but she will also receive her own signature shoe. And I'm sure that one will be a bestseller amongst many, many, many young players.
It did look, credit to you, Sam, I thought you were going to say among many young girls, and I was going to say you pig, but you said it yourself. Good job. Because I don't know if you saw the, you know, this season, one of the most popular shoes that people were wearing while Sabrina. Playing was the Sabrina Ionescu.
I think it's a good-looking shoe.
No, it is. Like, but, like, a lot of the you know, the guys in the NBA were rocking it, so, like, I do think it'll kind of transcend. And the guys always, like, kind of helping, trying to shout out the girls and help them grow. But, like, the Ionescu shoe is probably the actual best-looking basketball shoe that's came out in recent years. Social media bullying and social media pressure is probably going to get Asia Wilson a big payday, because when Caitlin Clark got her shoe announced, that was the new talking point. And it did look pretty bad optically. Like, I saw a tweet that's like, this is the third WNBA star to have their own signature shoe. And it's Sabrina Ionescu and Breonna Stewart, just three white girls sitting there with their own shoe. And it's led to some outcry of, like, hey, Asia Wilson's pretty good, and, you know, back-to-back champion, I believe, and maybe she deserves her own shoe. And she's kind of – she piled on a little bit. She didn't say anything herself to, you know, necessarily be like, hey, yeah, I feel disrespected. But she quote-tweeted someone saying it with the meme, the gif of Michelle Obama coming to take Barack's phone away, like, to keep him from tweeting stuff and something that would get him in trouble. So, like, that's the implication, is that, yeah, she is aware that doesn't have her shoes. So I think eventually you'll see somebody cut her a big old nice check too.
Do you see Fanatics is getting hit?
Oh God.
Getting grief again because they didn't. You know, the whole theory is, we talked about this too, that the Caitlin Clark jersey sold out, like, in no time. But now the debate goes back to, why didn't you didn't see this coming? You didn't have more of those made? And I think now it's just kind of piling on. I mean, you know, it's a supply and demand thing. They probably could have been better forecasting, but I just feel like right now Fanatics can do nothing right at this point. That's really what it's become.
Well, honestly, I felt that way about Fanatics the last 10 years. Like, I hate Fanatics. Like, every time, you know, there'd be some gear that I wanted, it was, like, linked to Fanatics, I would just not buy it. Like,
yeah. Anything that they make themselves, right, that's not tied to a line.
Yeah, almost. I mean, I just don't even try to, like, order anything off their website either, whether they make it or not. I do have one hoodie that looks kind of cheap, but it's actually comfy. It's like a big Titans hoodie that I kind of like. But outside of that, they've just struck out on everything. Like, I try not to order with Fanatics. But then, you know, they became such a powerhouse enough to where, you know, they're getting the deal with MLB and does the creator of Fanatics, does he have, like, any ownership stake in any of the sports teams, or have I made that up?
That's just Michael Rubin, right?
Okay, yeah, Michael Rubin. Like,
I don't think so, though.
Okay.
Look at you, Sam. I didn't know that about Michael Rubin.
He's a celebrity.
A big hater on Fanatics, so I know Michael Rubin.
And he was at something recently, too, where he was, like, they were putting him on the Jumbotron. He was at some big game. I don't remember what it was, but, yeah. I've always kind of hated Fanatics, so I'm happy So two of my ops that I've had for a long time, beef I've had, you know, one-sided beef I've had for a long time, but Fanatics getting ran through the ringer, as is Greg Doyle. So I'm City Boys are up over here. We're doing good.
Some NFL news, as former Ravens running back J.K. Dobbins signed a one-year contract with the Los Angeles Chargers, as him and Gus Johnson as well will be headed over there.
Gus Edwards?
I'm sorry, yeah, Gus Edwards. Not Gus Johnson. That would be cool, though.
Give me the ball!
Yeah, I would take Gus Johnson calling the Chargers games. But yeah, they reunite with Greg Roman. I'm sure they'll be wanting to run the football a lot. We'll see if he can stay healthy. J.K. Dobbins, a great talent when he's healthy, but is never really healthy.
So I'm thinking about the Chargers from a receiver standpoint. Quentin Johnson, is he their guy now? He's their number one?
Yeah, probably.
Wow.
Okay, so yeah, he did own a piece of the 76ers and Devils.
Okay.
Michael Rubin, he sold him in 2022. So yeah, that's why that was in my head. When he sold them in 2022, that's when he tried to like really expand Fanatics and like make it an actual power. So I guess that's why I was thinking that.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Hope they have like a terrible Fanatics jersey for the white party that he does. Just terrible quality. Everyone's got to wear some terrible Fanatics stuff that's all white.
He's so bad. Fanatics jerseys are so bad.
So bad.
Take some pride in your work, Michael. Yeah.
Don't cut corners.
You're a billionaire. Figure it out.
Jerseys used to mean something to people.
Yeah.
A good quality jersey?
I agree.
Yeah. G.I. Jake.
Yeah.
Got a lot of jerseys.
I'm going to say G.I. Jake loves his jerseys. He's working on a special jersey for the Fan Run crew. Like we care about jerseys here.
Yeah.
In the brand new studio. We care about jerseys at Fan Run Radio. Figure it out, Michael.
Figure it out. Lastly here, the hockey has come to a close in Phoenix. They wrapped up their season, bit of an emotional ending kind of there in Phoenix obviously they're moving over there to Salt Lake City, and there's been a ton of bad blood, I guess, between that organization and the city and trying to figure out how to keep them in there, and ultimately were unsuccessful, but you know, their fans kind of showed out last night and supported them. They got a win. Their whole team, did a little skate around, did a little standing ovation type of thing. And then their whole team went over to their equipment manager, who apparently has been with them for over 2,500 games. So he's been with them probably since the start of the Coyotes, I would assume.
So they're gone for good.
Yeah, they will be going to Salt Lake City.
And that's their new home.
Yeah.
I feel like that makes sense. Salt Lake City feels like a hockey town. It's cold, there's mountains.
I'm interested to see them just get some professional sports. I know they've been interested in the baseball team for a while, too.
Yeah, baseball, I don't know if makes
it
as much sense.
It right. Yeah.
Yeah, like we got the Rockies. It's already weird enough. We don't need two like high elevation places. But like hockey, yeah, that checks out. That feels good.
Charlotte and Nashville seem like the MLB cities that need to get yeah. something.
They're talking about WNBA potentially in Nashville too.
I saw that. Yeah, yeah. There were a bunch of different expansion sites.
That I definitely think you'll see the WNBA expand, and I think that's good. I don't know. I hope they're careful about how much they expand. I don't think they need to bite off more than they could chew, because like just now you're getting a nice influx of talent into the league, and you will over the next couple of years as college basketball continues to get better on the women's level. But like, you don't want to go too fast. Like, I feel like MLS went too fast with all their expansion. Like, MLS might be better suited having like 16 teams versus like, you know, how many do they have? Like 28? It's like, right?
MLS?
I don't even know. Yeah, it's in the upper 20s, I'm pretty sure, if it hasn't gotten to 30 yet. But like, that felt too fast. You need to be very careful. Make sure you still have good teams. You don't want just like one star and a bunch of scrubs on there.
29.
29? Okay, yeah. I was thinking 28, but I feel like MLS would be better suited with like 24 or like 18 and just having better teams, higher quality of play.
Yeah, I think I was reading, I think the next WNBA expansion team, they've got one on tap for maybe, it might even be not this season, but next season in the Bay Area, like in San Francisco. Which I think right now they have an odd number of teams, which I've always found a little weird, but I guess it doesn't matter that much. But yeah, I agree. I could see them adding a couple teams. They should not go too fast. It's just hitting its stride.
I've also read some stuff though that like they were saying that some of these girls that are getting drafted are just like also at risk of not even making their roster because there's just not enough roster spots in the WNBA.
I mean, I'd say that checks out. I mean, you can't really have a draft every year and then like, you know, just there's only 12 teams.
So I just feel like with the talent that's getting, you know, pushed into the college level, I feel like you're going to have to give a roster spot to some of these girls, you know.
I just think that they're going to try to really grab a bunch of money like and try to capitalize on this interest, but like I hope they keep in mind like a long-term goal. Like I don't necessarily think more is better when it comes to them having more teams, I guess is all I'm saying. But yeah, like when you look in the top teams are kind of stacked. I mean, like they do need to maybe break up a little bit. There's 12 teams now. I would say maybe just try to get to 16 should be the goal.
Yeah.
But that should be like the long-term goal, like for the next decade, like 16 max. So maybe if you bring in 4 expansion teams, that would maybe be ideal. Nashville is interesting. Nashville's wanted basketball. People have talked about the Grizzlies. Could you relocate them? Could you start another team? I think both of those things are dumb. Those aren't going to happen. But like a women's professional team with the Lady Vol footprints, do you think it would work in Nashville?
I think it might. I actually think it. I think that would stand a better chance. Yeah, I was gonna say it might stand a better chance in a men's team, honestly, just because of the, you know, from the expense perspective and everything else. I think it could work. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, with the women's side, you could still play in the 8,000 to 10,000 seat arena.
Right.
Whereas with the men, you know, you pretty much got to have 18,000 to 20,000. So I don't know where they would play. You know, I would imagine not Bridgestone. I don't know if there's another smaller arena that you could actually get into. I mean, I don't think they'd want to play in like Belmont or Vanderbilt's.
I would think they might start off at Belmont.
Really? Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know the capacity for most WNBA arenas.
I just know like this thing I saw yesterday was the latest thing is Chicago was trying to move their game against Caitlin Clark to the Amway Center there because they play in a 10,000 seat venue and they're like, hey, we need to expand because they've already sold out their games and like people want to see it. So like, hey, we need to get to a bigger one.
Belmont's way smarter than 10.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe the municipal auditorium where they used to do the like OVC tournament.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, this is a lot of pressure. That that Golden State expansion franchise that will be the 13th team, they're going to play at the Chase Center, which is where that's where the Warriors play. That's a big house, man.
Yeah, I imagine there are a couple that do play there, but I know like the Dream in Atlanta, they don't play in Phillips. They have a different smaller venue. So like, it'll look bad having a 20,000 seat arena if it's only like, you know, 30% full, but maybe they're banking on the growth and just don't want to build it. They can't afford to have a new arena there. They just built, you know, a big $1 billion one there for the Warriors, so might as well put it to use.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd imagine the same owner.
That I don't know. That's
yeah,
a good question.
I just figure if usually there's some synergy there in terms of you on the basketball team, so now you on the women's basketball team.
Yeah, and that's interesting. That's something we can talk about later in the show. Is it ties to Golden State and the kind of the value that they have as a sports franchise. We were talking about kind of the demise of them yesterday and why that could be problematic. And they tout that arena as like a multi-purpose thing that's for all sorts of things, you know. And that's why they're trying to rationalize how they can continue to make drive revenue from that, because the Warriors' revenue might have to take a hit at some point if they're not that good.
Let's catch a break. We'll come back. We'll hit the phone lines. It's the Morning Show on Fan Run Radio.
Ever been the coach who realized...
All right, let's go to the phone lines. 865-288-3131. T-Carp wants to hop on. T-Carp, top of the morning to you, my friend. Hope you're well.
Hey, buddy. How is my beautiful, bald-headed brother doing?
You know, I've had better mornings, but I'm a solid 7 out of 10 right now. How about you?
7 out of 10 is good. I've had my full cup of coffee. I totally wanted to, downshift back to your, 34 and, feeling like I should feel different at this age. Like, I felt, I always see my dad at the 34, 35 range, and I'm there, and I'm like, I thought I would feel different. You know what I mean? Like
100%.
I don't know. I just felt different. And maybe, I'm coming at it with two kids, and I still feel like, man, if I didn't have two kids and a wife to tell me what to do, I'd just be, screwing around playing video games all day, might show up to work, might not. I don't know, how do you do it without a wife and someone telling you what to do?
Not well, T-Carp. I don't do it very well at all. Luckily, I'm kind of a homebody, I guess. I got some friends that are my age or older that travel a lot more and seem to have a better time. But so I guess I get a little bit of both sides. I get to do whatever I want, but I'm also a homebody that doesn't want to actually do anything too drastic.
I hear that. I also wanted to deep dive a little bit into Tennessee athletics. About 6 or 7 years ago, you and I had a conversation on the voluntary reaction, and the conversation went like this: Tennessee will never be good again. And you and I both believe that. Now we look at the landscape of college football with the NIL era, Nick Saban being gone, all the sports, seemingly at UT seem to be top five, top 10 level. What happened other than Danny White, or is this the NIL era and Tennessee really jumped in and is taking advantage of that?
Well, first I would ask, how confident are you that we are a really good football team right now?
I'm confident we're top 15.
Okay.
How's that?
I think that's fair. Like I know that we are going to be a playoff contender. I don't know if we're going to get there. I hope we do, but there's still a part of me in the back of my mind that worries that 2022 was kind of an aberration, a perfect storm, if you will. Because last year you took that step back and you were back to being 8-4. So I was curious where you stood there. Bob, what about you? How confident are you that Tennessee is a really good football team right now?
I feel pretty confident. And I'd say I'd put it through the same framework that T-Carp just mentioned. It feels about right, like a top 15, top 16 program. And if you're delivering at that, if that's your floor on a regular basis, then to me, that's a really good program. This whole notion that you're competing for natties every single year, I think the landscape's gotten a lot flatter in that regard. I think, we saw it last year too, because it felt like it was just an Ohio State, Alabama, and Georgia game for the longest time. Maybe Clemson a little, but now Michigan's showing up. Now they're going to take a step back, but my point is I think there's more and more teams that can deliver on that, and I think Tennessee could in some years too. Year in, year out, I don't see it. But again, I'd be very happy with a perennial top 15 team that's going to compete in the playoffs regularly, have a shot at the national title from time to time. That would feel like success.
So, T-Carp, to answer your question, if Tennessee does have a really good season this year, and kind of proves that, hey, they're closer to 2022 than they were in 2023, I would attribute that to, A, having a good modern offense that, makes good quarterbacks look even better. And then also, you would look at, you said, the slip of Alabama, the slip of Clemson, them coming back down to earth a little bit, Florida not being the Florida that they used to be. And then you mix that in with NIL. That's what I would attribute it to.
Okay. I can definitely see that, and I throw a lot of the NIL. My theory is NIL just absolutely leveled the playing field for everybody. The Floridas, the Georgias, the Alabamas, and the Clemson, they had a better way of getting their players money, period, end of sentence, before the NIL, before everybody made it legal. They had a better system in place. And Tennessee in the 90s had one of the best systems in place. And we lost that. So I think that is the biggest, piece of this recipe, in my opinion. Now, yes, Josh Heupel, I love Josh Heupel's offense. I think it's great. And I think that's what you needed. But what do you? But my thing is too is you also got to have to look at men's basketball, and you also have to look at Tennessee baseball. There is something there's something at the university that's much better, and I don't know if we give Danny Watt enough credit. But anyway, I love you guys. Y'all have a good one. I'm gonna hop off here.
Appreciate you, T. Carp. 865-288-3131 if you want to follow T-Carp, if you have something to add to the conversation. Yeah, so like it's a little bit layered to me as, you know, like I said at the beginning, like how confident are you that we are actually really good? I would say I'm fairly confident this year. Like, you know, the defensive line Tennessee's supposed to have, the quarterback Tennessee's supposed to have, like Tennessee should be a 9-3 floor team. That's top 15 in the country with an outside shot of making the playoff. And an outside shot of being a 10-2 team. So, like, I do feel like that box has been checked. He brings up Danny White, and like, I know we sing Danny White's praises here. Dr. Danny, as he has doctored this university and got them back to good health. But got to give a shout-out there as they're now promoting, you know, America's College Sports Town, now a nation's best, 1,161,218 total home attendance for football, men's basketball, and women's basketball. So your three major sports that have happened, Tennessee number one. I'd like to see like what that was whenever you just had football and men's basketball. If we were number one and they're like, hey, let's throw the women a bone here too. If it's like, hey, no, if we move this number around a little bit, if we include the Lady Vols and do women's basketball, we move ahead of Michigan. Michigan had us at first, but we got them now, or Ohio State, or whoever your biggest competition would be. But, like, yeah, it's pretty impressive. Your three major sports, you have the most attendance in the entire country. So Danny White, I think, gets a lot of credit for that.
I agree, and I would say also we've talked about this. Let's not lose sight of the fact that Danny White is allowed to kind of flourish. And what I mean by that is I think there's a tip of the hat that goes out to the administration that works side by side with him, with you know, Randy Boyd, Dondé Plowman. And what my point is those are folks that certainly Randy Boyd is business oriented, and that's really what this has become in terms of collegiate athletics. And rather than someone who was a president of the university that might be more of an academic, and you know, I think they're proving now that at the University of Tennessee, you can have both. It's not just strong academics. And, yeah, you know, collegiate sports is just a nice add-on. They're saying they can be of equal importance, and you can be successful in both ends of it.
Well, that was what was so frustrating in the early 2010s was just Tennessee seemed so insistent on trying to get the academic side up, and, like, we're not going to take away resources from the school to give to the football program and reserve fund and yada, 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 we're broke. And it was just so frustrating as a young fan, because it was obvious to me at Sam's young, ripe age of 22, 23 years old, it made sense to me, and I couldn't understand how at Tennessee they couldn't grasp, hey, fix football and your entire university takes care of itself. Like, if you fix football and you get people at least excited and spending money for football, that's going to raise the other sports, but it's also going to raise your academic standards. Like, whenever you're good at football, people are going to want to come to school there, and you're going to attract more talent academically from across the country that want to be a part of the SEC atmosphere. And then Alabama proved that, you know, whenever they started bringing in all the people from up in New Jersey, and their ACT admission went from like 22 to like 30, you know, during Saban's heyday. Then all of a sudden you got smarter people there and everything takes care of itself. And now you're seeing Tennessee kind of have the same residual effect from the 2022 season. It made perfect sense. And like Danny White, I think, gets that. And Danny White, I think, realizes, and not just Danny White, like Randy Boyd and Dondé Plowman, like they understand, like, hey, we all kind of have to work together here.
Right.
We can't be working against each other. And for so long at Tennessee, it felt like, you know, people were working against each other.
Yeah, it's not more than anything, and you can break it to its simplest terms. Again, they're proving that it doesn't have to be one or the other. It can be all of it. And you know,
it has to. I think it has to be all of it.
Right.
Not that it can be all of it. I think it has to be all of it.
Right.
And again, credit to Plowman, credit for Boyd. Like, for them knowing that and caring about that, and you know, Chancellor Plowman, you know, walked around, looked just as happy about as anybody after the Sweet 16 win. We exchanged a high five, and I kind of held it a little bit. I lingered a little bit on the high five as we walked away. I kind of turned into a handhold. She seemed cool with it, but I choked, though, because I was like, man.
Greg Doyle in the house.
No, she was receptive. She actually, you know, approached us, and we gave a high five, and none of us caught her out because – in the back of my mind, I was like, is it Donda or is it Donde? I was like, because sometimes I go back and forth. I'm not great on pronunciations. And I can't just be like, Plowman! What's up, Plowman? So I just high-five and then lingered a little bit and just
DP.
Felt that energy after a win. But, like, she was walking around the concourse just as happy as anybody was that Tennessee had made their second ever Elite Eight. And, like, that's something that matters. Imagine like Jimmy Cheek doing that 12 years ago. Like that wouldn't have happened. It just wouldn't have happened. And I think that plays into things getting better too. I don't know how much I give Danny White credit for the football program being, you know, where it's at, but like it definitely seems like the leadership is all in lockstep. And like when you're talking about across all sports, Tennessee basketball might have died again had Randy Boyd not stepped up and fixed the Phil Fulmer problem. You know, that's something that gets lost sometimes in history, but like Phil Fulmer was not going to cave to Rick Barnes' contract demands and, you know, was kind of helping him pack his bags for UCLA if UCLA had actually like came up with the money. But eventually Randy Boyd gets credit for saying, hey, no, we're not losing our basketball coach. I'll make sure the money's there. And you kept Rick Barnes, and now, you know, fast forward since 2018-19, Tennessee's a top 10 basketball program. In the last 5 years, they're top 10. And that's Randy Boyd making sure that got done. And then, of course, you know, Philip Fulmer gets fired / retired, thank God. And, like, you are in a much, much better position from a leadership standpoint. I can't remember who brought it up first, but that's what this weekend just really highlighted, was just how much better position you are now, like leadership. Like everything ran smoothly, and I can't fathom that life before Danny White, like somebody pulling something off like that and having it run so smoothly and just looking so connected. Like, hey, we got our women's basketball coach throwing the first pitch on Friday. Then she's leading a little bit of a pep rally on Saturday as we're celebrating an SEC championship of our men's basketball program, and we're all one big family here, and it's not like everyone's fighting for resources. It's not like you're having to put down the other programs because they're getting the money, because that's what happened back in the day with football. It's like, hey, why are we giving so much attention to the football program to go 5-7? We got all these other schools. We need to invest in these other programs and invest in all this, and you're getting pulled in 8 different directions. But now it's kind of like everyone's in lockstep. It helps when everybody's good, but that's the thing. When everybody's good, life is much simpler. It's an ecosystem. Everyone has their place in line, and as long as the top, you know, top of the food chain is taken care of, everything else will just kind of work itself out.
Yeah, that was what I was saying when we did winners and losers earlier in the week. It's like, yeah, just...
Yeah, maybe it was you. Maybe it was you.
It was me. And again, you just break it down to its simplest terms. Again, imagine trying to achieve any of this with Phil Fulmer. That it's just not even possible. So feels good that we're in that direction. Hey, one more thing before we hit the break that I was going to mention too, and this goes back to because we've gotten a little bit of chatter on this we started it with the grown ass man analogy, and then we heard from T-Carp and heard a little bit on our 37 Club Discord too. One of the things that my wife sent, and it's actually true, and you think about it for any of us, I'm talking about, well, I talked earlier about my son, you know, and she wrote, he did his own taxes.
Hey.
Pays his own bills.
Hey.
Mostly, if you just say, if we feel confident that he could function if we were not around, then he's a grown man. And
okay.
And so for you, you were saying, because you are young, man. Don't kid yourself.
No, not really.
No,
I'm middle-aged. At the very least, Bob, I'm middle-aged. I'm not young anymore.
Middle-aged. Good Lord. I hope not, because if that's the case, I'm you know, I'm about ready to go to the grave.
You could be at the end of middle age. Like, yeah. You know, I don't know what the scale is, but, like, I'm not going to live to be 100. Like, I feel like if I got 70, I'd be good. If you can give me 70, I'd be like, you know what? Lock it in. And I'm 34, so I'm in the middle of my life. I'm middle-aged, Bob.
Well, again,
I can see you making it to 90 pretty easily. Like, you seem pretty healthy. I drink a lot more soda than you. You know, that you get the cheese protein every morning. Like, I feel like you've got it whipped. You got a good woman to take care of you. Like, you got 90 in your horizon, Bob. So, like, you're our middle-aged with me, too. But I'm 70. That's my cutoff.
Well, let's hope not. Let's hope you go longer than that, and I'd take 92. But also, no, again, the way I see it, and you're doing it, we're all doing it to a degree. Can you function on your own? Yes. And so play as many video games as you want, sleep in as much as you want, as long as you can still, you know, be a functioning person in society and make a living and all those things. There's no hard, fast rules other than can you take care of yourself? That's the thing.
Well, see, that's what I wonder if it clicks, though, because I do think there's something different between taking care of yourself and then taking care of other people, too.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I have confidence in taking care of other people. Like, the dog's taken care of.
Come on, Frank.
Frank's
man.
Taken care of, you know, 14 years, long time, Frank's taken care of, but, like, you know, I don't know, whenever he starts having some health declines, I don't know if I got it in me to have to take care of and make those hard decisions. I don't know. But, like, maybe it clicks. Maybe it's just like, hey, you have a kid, and all of a sudden you're wired completely differently. That's what kind of T-Carp laid out. I was like, you know, if the kids weren't around, I would just be a video game guy and just hang out. And I'm not even a video game guy.
When do you feel like you exited your prime?
I don't know if I ever had one. How do you exit a prom if you never had a prom? I don't know.
You got signed late. You're like the 30-year-old that gets called up to the MLB.
I'm like that guy from the Lakers a couple years ago that had been in the G League his whole career, and then he gets one taste at the very end and drops like 30. He's like, this is it, but it's over. His career's over at that point. And now we don't even remember his name. He's just that guy on the Lakers.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't have a prom either. One game. Bob, shout out to the 37 Club. Shout out to the 37 Club. You can sign up, become a member. We gave away a free golf team to a 37 Club member for the tournament this weekend. Shout out to Peyton. He will be playing, not Manning, but our favorite Peyton, a 37 Club member. You can join the 37 Club by going to fanrunradio.com/the37club. At certain levels, you get free merch every month. You get discounts. You get private access to communities, some cool stuff, some giveaways, some exclusive content. We're working on ramping all that up with an eye of really having it rolling by the time football season rolls around. But you can sign up fanrunradio.com/the37club. You know, and I think that plays into it, what your wife said about the taxes. Every year I'm reminded whenever it comes tax time, I'm like, I'm just kind of making this up. I really hope the IRS doesn't like come calling me and making sure that all my papers are actually in line, because I'm doing the best I can. But, like, it would be so much easier. You know how much money I made, IRS. Just tell me what to pay. It's like, nope, you got to figure it out. And I'm like, okay, we're going to put something there and hopefully you don't come get me. And that's what I think that maybe is why I'm feeling so, like, non-grown manish, Bob, is because tax day was the 15th. And I'm still kind of reeling from that this week. So, yeah, maybe that's what's in my head. Don't come get me, Taxman, if you're listening. My heart's in the right place. Come on. Let's go to break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Fan Run Radio is...
Going back to the Nashville expansion WNBA topic, Twitter writes in, says the WNBA is a losing proposition. It loses money every year. In 2022, it lost $12 million. Average attendance was 5,679. Bringing that to Nashville would not be a profitable enterprise. And, like, you know, I haven't fact-checked those numbers. I'll just work with those being correct. And I do know they had been losing money, and I do know that, like, the wage gap conversation got brought up with Caitlin Clark as well whenever you saw her salary get posted after she got drafted, where she's basically going to be making $80,000 to $100,000 over the first years of her contract. And that made people on the internet mad, talking about how underpaid the women players were, which leads to the men pushing back and saying, actually, she's probably overpaid when you look at the revenue they bring in and blah, blah, blah. And, like, that, both of those points are fine. Like, and, like, I don't – the wage gap discrimination talk when it comes to the WNBA always kind of is a losing proposition as far as I'm concerned for the people who support women's sports. But I do think that – just because it has lost money leading up to this point doesn't mean it will always lose money. Like, I do think, like, the average attendance of 5,679, I don't want to say is going to double next year, but, like, if it wasn't in the 8,000 average range, I feel like that would be pretty surprising to me whenever you start throwing in some of these outliers of the Caitlin Clark effect where you're getting 20,000 people in a handful of games across the country.
Yeah, I think it's a special year when you think about not only Caitlin Clark, that's the obvious, but then some of these other players that have a lot of notoriety too, and Cameron Brink and Angel Reese. And, I mean, I think the interest is going to be high, and I would agree on attendance. It's going to surpass that number comfortably. Won't be double, but it'll be a much healthier number.
Yeah, but either way, like, you're having some conversations about it. You had someone like Serena Williams talk about how she wants to buy a WNBA team, but really, to me, I find it interesting, not the expansion stuff, and, you know, we talk a lot about women's basketball over the last week or so, but, like, I really just like the idea of Nashville having another professional team. That's what interests me from that perspective, because they keep getting linked to baseball, but then that leads to everyone kind of pushing back and saying, hey, they don't have any money or, like, land or, like, an ownership group that can really actually do this in Nashville. Like, it's like, hey, bring the MLB to Nashville. Bring MLB to Nashville. It's like, okay, but who's going to do it and how are they going to do it? Like, it doesn't seem, like, actually reasonable or at least, like, realistic to be, you know, something that happens in the immediate future. Getting another professional sports franchise in Nashville is interesting to me. You know, I wouldn't hate it if it was in Knoxville. I was thinking about it being in Knoxville the other day, but Nashville makes more sense. But, like, just from that perspective, getting it into town, I think, would be appealing to me. I've always said it, and, you know, it just keeps continuing to rise and rise and rise to kind of prove the point, but owning a sports team is the coolest thing you can do if you're super rich. So I do think you would have people lining up to invest in this right now to get a sports team, just even if it is the WNBA, which loses money. Like, getting a sports team, your actual, like, asset will probably rise in value. You'll make money on it, and you'll get a seat. And, you know, if you want to be someone that looks woke or whatever, that you're supporting the women movement, like, you get to scratch that itch too. So, like, I do think there'd be interest in people wanting to do it in really any state, but in particular in Nashville.
Well, and I think the other thing too, and it's really one of the straws that stirs the drink for all professional sports at this point, and the WNBA will be no different, is because of kind of the explosion that has happened with these big name players in this past season collegiately that are coming into the WNBA, along with the current players that are in the league too, and the continued popularity of the game. Media rights. Right now, the current deal, well, that too, but the current deal for media rights is about $60 million a year. And considering they're not going to get in the same realm as the NBA, which is going to be in the billions for their next media rights deal. But could that number be doubled? I think it could be. I think it could hit, you know, like a nine-figure range for the next deal, and that's going to be renegotiated in just one more season. So I think there, and that's money that flows to the NBA, which helps manage it, but I do believe there's some participation that happens for the franchises, which gets it closer to being it's not a loss leader at some point. It becomes kind of a money-making opportunity.
We've talked about it. We've talked about the unknown, being interested in the effect and the long-term effect and how much it actually grows. But that is a story in sports that I think a lot of America cares about, you know, or at least is interested in seeing. You'll have people that are rooting against it or that don't care and still won't care, and that's fine. You'll have some people that care about it a little too much and take it a little too personally if it doesn't grow. That's fine too. I'm in the middle of just wanting to see the ride, and if you can give me two or three games a year that I care about, that's more than I would have in the summer otherwise. So, like, I think having a more things in sports to watch and really have conversations about is ultimately my goal. I saw something along the same lines of ownership and basketball that Steve Ballmer's doing to try to create a better atmosphere when it comes to professional basketball, because that's something that is lacking outside of all the times, except the postseason. You know, you talk about college basketball having better atmospheres and student sections and the games being louder on TV and the passion. I guess he's going to try to create that in Los Angeles. I don't know how it's going to work with the Clippers and that fan base, you know, being second in the city, and I don't know if there are any real diehard Clippers fans, but I like the change he's trying to make to professional sports, where he has said their new arena that opens next year, the Wall, is kind of the driving point there. I guess a big one. Do you know what the Wall is, Bob? Can you explain what the Wall actually is?
My take on it is that it's just like a big, it's almost like the NBA's version of maybe a student section, you know, where,
right,
where it's, you know, they're going to try to, you know, get super fans in a place where they can get super rowdy and all of that. That was my takeaway on
it. So is it just going to be like just a big pit, like with the big wall behind it that kind of encapsulates it?
Yeah, I've seen some renderings, and it does look like it's actually, it's kind of, it's pretty wild looking if it's going to play out that way. It's like, it feels like it's kind of a higher pitch. So I'm not sure it's a pit, but it's an area that is, again, it's kind of like, it's not a wall, you know, straight vertical, obviously, but it's kind of on an incline that's a little different than you might see in other arenas. That was my takeaway on it.
And they're going to try to, like, trap some noise there or whatever. But he has made it so that, like, hey, the wall is going to be a premium section. And, you know, if you want to be right there behind the basket really affecting things, he's going to treat it like a student section. First come, first serve. The sooner you get to the game, the better seats you get.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you'll see, you know, the Duke student section, other student sections across the country having to camp out and be in line for the game. Like, you got that option now in professional sports with Steve Ballmer and his new innovations. Like, hey, we want our best fans, the people who care the most, to actually be right there in our best spots being loud. And he's also put some rules in that you can't wear other teams' gear in the wall. You got to be wearing Clippers gear, which is going to lead to somebody at some point coming in a Clippers shirt or a Clippers jersey and then removing it NWO style and revealing like a Los Angeles Lakers shirt underneath it. Oh, my God, it's the purple and gold. He was a Lakers fan the entire time. And they'll come and forcibly remove them probably. But, like, yeah, you got to be willing to cheer loud, cheer for the home team, he said, and no opposing gear, and get there as soon as possible.
Yeah, and the one factor that you can't control in L.A. is hopefully it'll fill up in time. People get there late because of traffic and everything else. It's always a challenge there. So that's one wrinkle in it. But I think it's kind of a cool idea, definitely. I'll be very interested to see what it looks like, what it sounds like, all of that.
51 uninterrupted rows of passionate Clippers fans, including a standing-only section that will add another 300 of our most energetic fans, he says. So, like, he's going to try to create some type of college atmosphere with the Clippers. I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know if it's the franchise to necessarily try it, but I do think it's the owner to try it and one that'll take a risk and try something new. So I am interested in that. And then, yeah, you have the detail today that's like, hey, the sooner you get there, the better. You can be front row. You want to sit front row in an NBA game? We'll get there at noon.
Hey, one last thought on WNBA in Nashville. What if Taylor Swift got involved in ownership and team in Nashville?
It'd be a good PR move for her.
Sure would.
Be a good PR move for the league. She's an NFL girl, though. She can't compete against the NFL. She's an NFL girl. Have there been rumors of that? I mean, that would be kind of...
No, just a hypothetical.
You know, just give her a stake. You would think she'd want to be involved in it. It's an easy win for everybody involved.
Oh, yeah.
0.5% of stake, whatever. It's an easy stroke of the pen for her. A little transfer, a wire transfer, check. Here's $100 million. Who cares?
Writes a theme song for the team.
Yeah, you know, maybe. I hope that happens, actually. Hour two in the books. We'll talk some college football in hour three. Outkick, the coverages, Trey Wallace. Do they still do the coverage part of it, or is it just all Outkick?
Just Outkick.
Yeah, they've dropped that. So just Outkick. Outkick's Trey Wallace. our college football insider. Coming up at the top of the hour, stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Looking for a luxury